supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Our nearest stellar neighbor at a mere 4.2 light years from Earth offers additional intrigue with the discovery of a second planet in its orbit. Let's travel to Proxima Centauri on this episode of Sky Talk with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. So, Derek, this closest star to us, does it burn very brightly in the night sky?
Well, as it turns out, the star in question we're speaking of, Proxima Centauri, is right next door to Alpha Centauri. And Alpha Centauri, as many people are aware of, is that star that's really close to us. So we have this pair of stars there. And Alpha is visible. It's a star that's visible from the southern hemisphere sky. Centaurus is a constellation of the southern sky. But the star in question, Proxima, is much dimmer. It's a red star, so it doesn't really have a whole lot of energy output in terms of bright light that we can see. But it does have two planets. There's Proxima A and Proxima now B Centauri that have become really rather intriguing to us.
But if this star burns at a lower flame, are these planets even close enough to derive any of the heat?
The most recently discovered planet-like object, now known as Proxima B, happens to be outside the habitable zone. It also is about six times more massive than Earth, and those things combined make it less likely as a place where we might find some form of life as we know it.
But again, our next-door neighbor is a mere 4.2 light years away. It seems like you could just go visit.
And that's the intriguing part about this. It's the next closest star to us. But close in a relative term. It's 4 light years away. That means if we travel at the speed of light, 186,000 miles per second, we could get there in just 4 years. Not bad. Except for the fact that we don't have any spacecraft that are traveling anywhere near the speed of light, especially if we're thinking about a large spacecraft with lots of mass, people, and all the supplies they need to, you know, survive a very long trip like that.
But what if we jettison humans and almost all the weight and baggage and freight?
Who needs the people involved in this one? Yes, in fact, that is an interesting solution. There is a project called Breakthrough Starshot that's been funded to the tune of $100 million by Russian venture capitalist Yuri Milner. Now, Yuri got together with Mark Zuckerberg and Stephen Hawking to create the idea of sending nanospacecraft on a journey out to this next closest star. But here's the catch about that. How would you power them on a trip that far out? Well, the thought was put forth to use what are called solar sails. And so this would be a large piece of a very, very, very thin, say, aluminum, for example, that would act as a sail tied to the chip. And the energy source that would be used to drive this would be a laser beam from Earth. The energy of the laser beam on the solar sail would act as the wind beneath the wings or behind the sail to push it along. And the idea in this particular case is to send about 1,000 of these rather than just one.
So this thought, this idea, this theory, how close is it to being put into practice?
Well, there actually is a project like this in test right now in orbit around the Earth called LightSail. And that is one that's being tested to prove out this theory of actually doing this. So if we put those two together, the chip and the sail, all we need to do now is the power source. That would be a very, very powerful set of lasers. What's proposed is a square kilometer array of laser beams that would generate about 100 gigawatts of laser power that would be used to push these tiny little spacecraft along towards their destination.
And when laser pedal to the metal is put into place, how fast can they go?
Well, it's thought that they could get somewhere between 15 and 20% of the speed of light. If you can get to that speed, you're going to cut the travel time down to somewhere between 20 and 30 years. But if you think about it, that kind of distance, 24 trillion miles is about the mileage distance from here to there. If we could do that in, say, 20 years, and then receive a signal back from that star system over the 4-year radio signal travel time, we would have unprecedented access to information about the system because we'd be right there with this nanotechnology.
Let's try to take up the most fundamental equation. The stuff of our universe is what we can observe.
Yes.
A little piece.
That's right.
Plus dark matter, which is an enormous piece.
Yes.
And then this notion of dark energy, which explains why, counterintuitively, we're expanding at a greater rate where we thought we'd be perhaps slowing down. But that fudge factor, as it were, is coming into some scrutiny?
Yes. Let's go back to the beginning here, because this is a confusing topic almost at best. You know, when astronomers sit down to total up all of the matter in the universe, what all is there? How much stuff is out there? Naturally, you'd assume you take a telescope, scan around the skies, take a bunch of photographs, look at the number of galaxies, figure out what the mass of a galaxy is, and then multiply that by the number of galaxies you see, and then you might statistically expect there to actually be. And that would give you a number. Okay, great. Well, as it turns out in physics, you can take that information and use it a bunch of different ways. You can use it to also tell you things about how fast should these galaxies be moving in the expansion of the universe and things of that sort. But when astronomers tried to figure this out, they came up with some very different numbers. And in fact, what they found out is that what we see of the universe, what we actually see, the matter that we know exists, all the stuff around us that we know is the stuff of the universe, only comes up to 4% of what the mass of the universe really ought to be based on the kind of activity we see in our universe. How fast is the universe expanding? How fast are the galaxies outrushing along with that expansion? And all the other kinds of things that are happening. So astronomers had to begin to figure out what could actually be going on. And an astronomer by the name of Vera Rubin figured out, through her examination of galaxies all around the universe, that they too were rotating at speeds that should not have been possible for them, because at those speeds, they would expand and blow apart. Well, as it turns out, she followed up on a theory known as the theory of dark matter. And as it turns out, we now believe there's plenty of dark matter, and that makes up 80% of the universe's mass. So now we have 80% of this stuff and 4% of that stuff. That other 16% is something that we now call dark energy. This is the force that seems to be driving the expansion of the universe in galactic clusters. But as it turns out, the way we measure our way around the universe has been called into question by a group of astronomers, and the action of dark energy is totally reliant on our understanding of distances around the universe and how we measure that. So with that basic measurement now being called into question, it actually begs the question of the existence of dark energy at all, because their work has made the dark energy seem to evaporate away. Now, not all astronomers have gone along with this premise, and in fact, it's been called into question for more examination and more study, as science is wont to do always. But the question really is if this turned out to be true, we now have a new mystery on our hands of, if it's not dark energy, what is it that's causing the expansion of the universe?
We have a moment left. What's available to be seen in the night sky this week?
In the morning, it's the Moon and Mars, Monday and Tuesday of this week from 6:15 to 6:30 over on the eastern side of the sky. The Moon is going to slide past Mars on Monday and Tuesday morning, so you'll see that really easily. Jupiter is now very low in the eastern sky at 6:30. And yes, in the evening sky, that bright thing over in the southwest, that is Venus. It'll be there for another few months, getting brighter and higher as the days go on.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on Sky Talk.